This is Fresh Air. How big an impact can 79 episodes of one TV show make? Well, ask William Shatner. After 79 episodes of Star Trek, he will forever be Captain Kirk in the minds of his fans. And let's face it, some of his Trekkie fans are pretty obsessive when it comes to Star Trek. The series concluded in January of 1969, but there's no end in sight to the phenomenon. As if the Star Trek movies and Star Trek The Next Generation weren't enough, last week Paramount Communications announced its plans for a fifth national network, which is scheduled to debut in 1995 with a series called Star Trek Voyager. Why swim against the tide? William Shatner has written a new book called Star Trek Memories. We invited him to share some of those memories. I asked him what he thought when he first saw the costumes.
The designs weren't unknown to me. The sketches by Bill Tice, who was one of the people that died recently, that propelled me into doing the book. I saw the sketches and the redrafting of the sketches, and actually these costumes were made in the way they were and the material they were made, because the shows cost something less than $180,000 per show. Nowadays, that would buy the catering to a television show, but those years ago, you could spend $185,000 and get something decent, although it was a very low figure for an hour show. Even then, we on Star Trek were able to manage with it.
Did you ever feel like you were wearing pajamas?
If you meant, was I sleepwalking half the time, maybe.
It's not what I meant, actually. But.
No, it may have looked like pajamas, or they may look like your pajamas. But I didn't feel that, no. The velour that they were made of stretched a lot. I mean, they were only stood so many cleaning, but the studio would never go for more permanent material, because there's always the fear that the show's going to be canceled momentarily. Any show, whether it's a long-run Broadway show or a hit television show, there's always that fear that it may not last too much longer, so we better not invest any permanent money here.
So let's get to the very high-tech special effects.
The shaking of the camera.
Yeah. How are you beamed up?
Well, beaming up was a device, a dramatic device, so that you didn't have to have a gangplank go down or an elevator or a shuttle to go from the ship to the shore. So it was an invention of convenience. And it really is just a dissolve. Two blank pieces of film dissolved together with a little spritz in it on the film, did a little sparkling, and it's a very simple special effects, long since thought of as primitive.
What did you have to do to make it work so that the effect would be convincing?
We would stand on these plates of glass that had lights underneath them, and the lights would go up and down. The camera's rolling. Camera continues to roll, and we walk off. They then film the empty space with the lights going up and down. And what they do in the post-production is cut out our walking off and dissolve the film. The camera has stayed locked off. The camera has not moved and continues to roll. And dissolve the piece of film that has us standing on the plates of glass, and the empty plates of glass that we're standing on. And the dissolve is either, if we arrive, is from the empty to the people standing in it, or from the people standing in it to the empty if we're leaving. It's very simple. With a little scratching on the little sparkling.
So for you as the actor, it was like, stand here for a few seconds.
Right. And in the first several months of filming, we didn't quite understand that the walking off was not going to be there, no matter what we did. We could run, walk, crawl off. It was not going to be there. So we kind of walked off in character, you know, as though this was meaningful. It became hysterical to us, months later, as we began to realize the techniques that the simplistic template techniques that were involved that required not much intelligence to understand, we thought were highly complicated. Something was happening we didn't understand. We better be in character all the time.
If you're just joining us, my guest is William Shatner, and he's written a new book about the history of Star Trek called Star Trek Memories. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. William Shatner is with us. He's written a new book called Star Trek Memories. Now, I seem to remember lots of episodes in which Captain Kirk would go to another planet where a lonely, horny woman would try to kidnap him and keep him for her own.
Yes.
Have I exaggerated the number of episodes like this over the years?
Yeah, not in my opinion. It's all I can remember. The whole thing is fading from view except those beautiful girls.
So did the romantic episodes go over well?
Oh, my God. I look forward to them each week. Who's the girl this week? Who did you bring me this week, said the king. You
know? What are some of the get-ups that
brief costumes. Again, Bill Tice came to my rescue and made those girls as naked as possible, basically because we couldn't afford too much wardrobe, so the less material he had to use, the better, and that was part of it. You know, he'd get some expensive crepe or organdy and use as little of it as possible. You know, a little drape here and a little handful there, and it was enough. It was as risque as television got in those days, and unfortunately, I was the recipient of all that. Risqueness?
Risqueability? Who knows? Yeah. There was an episode in which you were supposed to kiss Lieutenant Uhura, but the kiss ended up being faked. Would you tell us about that?
Well, there was a big to-do about Nichelle Nichols and I kissing for the first interracial. I mean, it's so stupid. It's just, even to tell it is outlandish. As it turns out, the plot had the two of us, against our will, merge into each other's arms, and then there was going to be this kiss, and then there became this huge discussion by the network and the studio and everybody involved whether there should really be a kiss or not. Everybody was so afraid of what the affiliates might do, seeing Captain Kirk and the communications officer kissing, so everybody got frightened, and it turned out that we never really kissed, and we were doing it against our will. So, I thought that was just it was just unfortunate, big to do about nothing.
When Star Trek really took off in syndication, did you feel vindicated and think, "I knew it all along. This is a great show," or did you look at its success and think, "I just don't get it"?
Well, I was removed from it because in those years, residuals stopped after 5 replays. Well, by the time it got to syndication, it had replayed 5 times somewhere. So we, the actors, never received any money from the fact that it played innumerable times over the years. Some of the bitterness that may still reside in some of the actors is as a result that their faces have become extremely well known, but they haven't been compensated commensurately.
But what did you think of the show's success?
I was astonished. Who would have thought that a show, it was just a phenomenon.
I mean, like I said before, did you feel vindicated? Did you feel
No. It was more, I don't get it, yeah. Mm-hmm. It wasn't vindicated by any means. I thought it had its natural life, you know. We struggled against odds and made something work for 3 years. Again, in itself, was unusual.
If you're just joining us, my guest is William Shatner. He's written a new book called Star Trek Memories. William Shatner, I'm going to play a record.
You what?
Do you know what's coming?
I have no idea.
Okay, here it comes. This is you.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you. You answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. the girl with the sun in her eyes, and she's gone!
William Shatner, this record has become a kind of a camp favorite over the years.
So it seems.
Yeah, what's the story behind how you made this record? Whose idea was it? What was the idea behind it?
Well, it was a concept record, and
the album was called The Transformed Man.
Right, and what I had attempted to do there was combine speech and song so that there are excerpts from classical plays that precedes that cut. Now, Loosing the Sky with the Diamonds was LSD. And I don't quite remember the cut that precedes. I think it's Cyrano de Bergerac with the speech that ends, I may climb to no great heights, but I will climb alone, that had original music written to it. So it in effect, were lyrics to a song, to a musical theme. Segues into Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which is a drug song of a person who can't climb alone. So the idea was amorphous, perhaps, but it was an honorable idea. What's happened is nobody plays the cut that precedes it. They play Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Although listening to that, if you were to take a drug song and if you were to visualize colors and kaleidoscopes, you might have some fun thinking of a new interpretation of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
So you still like it?
I listened to that little cut. I didn't mind that. My voice is a tenor there. That's a long time ago.
Sometimes I put on the TV on Saturday afternoon when they have their like monster horror chiller theater type show on, and you're there battling the spiders.
Yeah, another cult favorite. I have become a cult favorite over the years for one or another of things I've done. I've got to get into the straight world soon.
Now, what about Rescue 911? Where does that fit in?
I think that's the straight world.
That's the straight world?
Yeah. Rescue 911 is tremendously successful. And on November 23rd, we are putting on a special show celebrating, dramatizing the 200 life saved by people who have watched the show. That means at least 200, and I know it's far in excess of that, 200 lives have been saved as a result of watching that show, and we dramatize some of those lives, and it's very, very moving, and a great honor to be connected with something as like Rescue 911, who's affected that mm-hmm. number of people.
So did you go to the Star Trek conventions now?
Not really. I've been on occasions, especially when there's a movie coming out or a book that mm-hmm. I'm selling.
Do you find the obsession of some fans almost scary?
Well, it can be. Obsessions can be scary, although for the most part, for the large most part, the people who go to those conventions are having a ball. They're having fun, and they're playing with a show and a concept and an idea that is fun to them. It brings them together. It brings them, unites them as friends. And a lot goes on in those conventions that is very warm and wonderful and admirable. Some of the fringe element are a little way out, but that's what fringe elements are.
I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
William Shatner's new book is called Star Trek Memories. This is Fresh Air.